AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by the Conservation at Work video series. Farmer to Farmer, the Conservation at Work video series features real stories, real successes, real quick. See what's possible at farmers.gov/conservation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you want to talk about an issue that creates all kinds of different reactions, the proposed CO2 pipelines for the middle of the country generate several different kind of reactions. And to talk about those reactions and what's going on at Navigator CO2 Pipeline is Elizabeth Burns Thompson. She is the VP Government. The VP of Government and Public Affairs for Navigator CO2. Elizabeth, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. So let's start with really the basics of this. Who is Navigator CO2? What's the ownership team and some of the Navigator partners here?
Sure. So Navigator at its core is a midstream company. So the folks that I work alongside, have designed, constructed, and operated basically pipeline infrastructure in all different geographies and applications all around the United States. What the team has done is pull together that expertise and really focus it in different part of the United States here in the Corn Belt, and application into the CO2 space, which really has an interesting tie into, as I'm sure we'll discuss in greater detail, applications into industries that are much different than maybe oil country, because we sit in corn country here.
Yep. Yeah. And some of the partners that have connected with Navigator through this, you've got BlackRock, Valero, Poet, Siouxland Ethanol, I believe, is a partner on this. It's quite the list of partners.
We do. We have some of the biggest in the business. So between Poet being the largest ethanol producer in the country and Valero coming in there at number two, we also have Big River on that rankings. I think they come in around number four, number five. I'm not sure exactly lineage is, but we also have standalone independent operators like Siouxland, which is over there in the eastern side of Nebraska, as well as fertilizer represented on the line. Okay. So we have OCI, or the Iowa Fertilizer Company, down in Weaver, so way in the southeast corner of the state of Iowa, that's participating in the technology and the infrastructure as well.
Okay, so the goal of Navigator is to move the CO2 from these ethanol plants into a location where the CO2 can be permanently sequestered. What does a company like Valero, like Poet, like Big River, Siouxland, what do they hope to benefit from the partnership?
Sure. So, the projects are kind of talked about as being carbon pipelines. You'll hear me regularly talk about them as carbon management platforms. There is absolutely a pipeline as part of that, but sequestration, or effectively where we're taking that CO2 and injecting it underground, is one piece of what this infrastructure does provide. At a bigger picture, so pulling that up to more 10,000 feet scale, what this infrastructure is looking to help solve is logistic challenges associated with management of CO2. So in destination, or one of the end destinations of this line being that sequestration, where they're effectively reducing carbon emissions by being able to sequester that under the ground. But we also do utilize CO2 for a number of different applications, and especially in the ag sector, when you look at the protein processing marketplaces as well. So, our shippers on the line do necessarily see CO2 as something that needs to necessarily be managed, and an infrastructure being able to solve that problem such that they can more efficiently and effectively get that CO2 either to a marketplace that needs it, and or opportunities for sequestration. Those that are familiar with ethanol know that, there's a reason we call them ethanol plants. They were built at their core to take corn and turn it into a fuel. what we've grown to be is truly biorefineries. When you think about the value in the marketplaces that have developed as it relates to the DDGs, as it relates to corn oil, something I'm really familiar with having just come out of the biodiesel and the renewable diesel sector. But the last remaining piece of that co-product or byproduct really is CO2. And so there's an opportunity here to, much like we've done with all of those other byproducts, turn them into valuable co-products if we've got the infrastructure and markets in place to be able to support that.
Gotcha. Okay. So how do we get these benefits? And I'm thinking primarily the financial benefits of this management, the CO2 management, back to the corn growers.
Sure. So one of that is the value of the markets for the grain to begin with. You know, when you look at the positive basis that's come back into many communities, it's by boosting demand. That's having a number of places for you to deliver to, frankly. And so as ethanol plants are able to also access more highly valuable markets, that's beneficial not only for them, but then ultimately, you know, what they can provide back into the marketplace. I think twofold, also looking ahead at the opportunity there, we talk a lot about carbon, and not necessarily just carbon as it relates to fuels, but farmers are talking about carbon day in and day out as it relates to practices on their farms too.
Right.
These two activities absolutely work hand in hand, not one but for the other. So just like how the plants themselves are beginning to differentiate that value associated with each gallon that's coming out of the facility, so too are farmers looking at being able to differentiate the value on a carbon basis on every bushel that's coming off of their farm and thus into these marketplaces. And those two things, you know, technology will help ensure that happens even more effectively, and then thus that valuation, you know, can be differentiated as well. So carbon, I talk to producers day in and day out. We are already used to quantifiable characteristics that determine the value of the commodities we bring to market. We measure moisture, we measure FM, we measure damage, right? Every time you go across the scale, carbon has the potential to be much the same way.
Interesting. Okay. So companies or organizations like RFA, the Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, are supportive of these pipelines. And they see it as a way to get to net zero on the carbon footprint for ethanol, correct?
Absolutely. In fact, I think many of them have come forward and say that, you know, there really isn't a technological way for us to reach that net zero pledge without rather robust industry-wide adoption of carbon capture technology. And you can see that when you look at the charts of what tools are in the toolbox for decarbonization. You can effectively reduce that carbon score of a gallon of ethanol by nearly 50% by adoption of this technology.
Right. Okay. So when I talk with farmers that have attended one of the CO2 pipeline meetings, that we usually end up in about the same spot, and that spot comes down to the right-of-ways. They remain skeptical that they will be adequately compensated for giving the okay for the pipeline on their land. And beyond that, they're concerned that if a landowner does not come to an agreement with the right of way, that it will be taken via eminent domain. How does Navigator address those concerns?
Absolutely. No, and I think that those are good points. And I want to start with just a highlight that we absolutely understand all of those concerns. I myself am a farm kid from Eastern Iowa, so I personally know and appreciate that intangible valuation that's associated with ground, and especially farmland that's been in families sometimes for generations upon generations. So I think not shying away from tough conversations about that is step one. Step two is outlining first that our goal is to reach a value that's fair and equitable. That value is necessarily in the eyes of the beholder, and this is a negotiation. So, you know, we're out there starting with initial offers, but getting to a point that's fair and equitable necessarily is a conversation and a negotiation, and we want to go out and have those conversations in a collaborative fashion with folks. And I think lastly is the questions about eminent domain. I think it's unfortunate how that has been portrayed to the public, such that it's presented as if this is a Trump card that we hold in our back pocket. And that's not the case. If you think about just the basic tenets of eminent domain at its core, it really doesn't make a lot of business sense. And in large part, it doesn't save us time, it doesn't save us money, and it doesn't make us any friends. And any business would tell you that those are three critical points to not only being successful in the short term, but long-term viability and operations. So when we say that this is absolutely a tool of last resort, it not only makes sense from a practical manner, but truly from a business sense as well.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, it is an option that the pipelines consider viable.
It's a tool that is available in different jurisdictions under different pretenses. So to say that there is a blanket application or a blanket threshold associated with eminent domain is an oversimplification as well.
Okay.
Each state does it a little bit differently. So, happy to walk through those in greater detail too.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll probably have to do that, Elizabeth. I cannot believe that we're out of time already. Good grief. So let's make sure that we get together again on this topic and continue the conversation, okay?
We'd love to do so.
Excellent. That is Elizabeth Burns Thompson. She is the VP for Government and Public Affairs for the Navigator CO2 Pipeline.